From the UCLA Labor Center and KPFK, you're listening to Rework.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
I'm Stephanie Ratopper.
And I'm Sabo Wahid. It's election time, and we're on the ground floor of the Scope office in South Los Angeles. The meeting rooms are bustling with staff and volunteers getting ready to hit the streets and talk to residents about some of the upcoming ballot initiatives.
It's residents who want to talk about issues with their neighbors and work with them to build solutions. It's about getting people to engage, to fight that feeling that it just doesn't matter, that my vote doesn't count, or that nothing will change. Not just during a presidential election year, but every day, getting involved and coming together to solve problems. In today's episode of Rework, we take a deep dive into the human stories behind those that are building community, block by block. Sirenia grew up in Mexico. The eldest of five children, she worked in her parents' business and did all the housework. She never got the chance to go to school. In 1986, when she was 14, her father brought her to the United States, and even though he eventually went back, Sirenia stayed and continued to work here. She worked in various low-wage jobs and wasn't that politically engaged. But then, in 1994, she felt the impulse to get into politics.
It was when Prop 187 began. From there on, I began to get involved. I worked as a janitor back then with the Janitors Labor Union. They focus a lot in getting involved politically, and it was in that manner that I began to get involved in working and becoming a volunteer in the union's political committee.
Prop 187 was a California ballot initiative to prevent undocumented people from accessing social services, including sending their children to public school. A month before the vote, more than 70,000 people marched in downtown LA against the measure, arguing that it discriminated against immigrant communities, particularly Latinos. It passed with a wide margin, 59% yes to 41% no. But in its aftermath, 1 million Latinos registered to vote by the year 2000 in California.
And Sirenia was part of the movement to get more Latinos involved in the electoral process. She worked with various groups and encouraged people to get out and vote. Through that process, she found Scope, a South Los Angeles group that builds grassroots power through community organizing education, and started to volunteer with them.
A lot of people, especially Latinos, don't come out to vote. But now, this time, it was interesting to me because this organization wants to work with the community. So their focus is to work with African Americans as much as with Latinos. Another thing that I liked about them is that they want to bring jobs here in South Central Los Angeles. So it is not only coming to do community service or only coming to get out the vote, but they are also informing us about the propositions for the upcoming elections and things that help in the community here in South Central Los Angeles.
Sirenia has been spending her free time knocking on doors and talking to people about upcoming ballot initiatives. There's an upcoming ballot initiative that could stop youth of low-level crimes from being tried as adults. It's something that would have helped her own daughter, who as a teenager got caught up in the criminal justice system.
It is very difficult when our children get involved in those types of problems. It's very difficult for them to get out of that. And it's taken a lot, but right now, because she's a mother now, she has her children, she sees things differently. I think that sometimes her frustration is that she cannot find a job. I personally have backed this proposition because in reality, in a lot of cases, they accuse them like adults. They spend a long time in jail, then they're released. And if they have it in the records that they have been in jail for a certain reason, it is more difficult for them to get a job. So then that is why I'm promoting this proposition, so that these young adults that happen to commit a crime can be rehabilitated and won't keep on committing crimes and can have a normal life.
Sirenia learns the ballot initiatives inside and out so that she can talk about them with other residents. How they vote will impact her life, her family, and her community. She's committed to getting people who may not have voted to understand the issues, speak up, and take a stand. Because the thing is, Sirenia herself can't vote.
Well, since I have a lot of years participating in getting the vote out, I found out about propositions, about everything, and also how certain things can affect us or how it can benefit us. So then I say, if I can't vote, then I'll tell people to do it. I talk to them about the propositions, and I've been a volunteer at my children's school for many years. Right now, since I've been coming here, I have a little bit of knowledge about the propositions that are going to be on the ballot in November. And I brought the mothers here as volunteers, some that can vote and some who cannot vote. And in that manner, I try to get them involved also in letting them know of what can affect us and what benefits us and what doesn't benefit us. Although I cannot vote myself, I do try to get the people who can indeed vote to come and to know, to inform themselves about what's happening in politics.
What do you say when you meet people who have the right to vote, but they just don't use it?
Well, first of all, I tell them that they need to use their right to vote in order for things to change in our community. There are a lot of funding cuts in schools, medical services, so if they don't vote, that affects us. Not only us who do not have proper documentation, but it also affects them. So then it is a matter of telling them to vote, to inform themselves, and I invite them to come here to scope, and if they have any doubts or questions here, we can give them more information. Here, we can inform them more about what's happening.
What Serenia is showing us is that there's many ways to be involved. We are all affected by the laws and policies, and whether it's through direct voting power or through community building, we can all be a part of making change. After interviewing with Serenia, we talked to Patricia, who is a longtime resident of South LA. She's been living there for three generations. Her grandmother moved to LA in the early 60s when she was a single mom with five children.
Well, you know, every parent or grandparent descended from other states. So my grandparent and my mom came from Texas.
Do you know a little bit about the story of why your grandparents came and what that process was like?
Not really. I really don't know why she decided, but I know back then in the 60s and the late 50s, everybody descended and headed west for a better way of living. And so, you know, she hit, I guess you could say, jackpot because she bought a three-unit apartment building complex.
So 1940s, we see a huge shift in demographics, a lot of African Americans come from the South to LA, and a lot of policies had changed at the time where there was less discrimination in the defense industry. There was expanded access to manufacturing and government jobs. And what happened is that these jobs, they were good jobs, they were well-paying jobs, and they actually helped create a black middle class in Los Angeles. In fact, the income gap between black and whites from the 1940s to the 1960s actually decreased.
And I think you can hear that in some of what Patricia says about her stories of growing up in South LA. And she talks a lot about South LA with a feeling of nostalgia for a better time.
I remember when they used to call it South Central. Then they turned it to South LA. We had a unit in a community when everybody raised each other kids. You know, it was nothing that you could do wrong without Miss Johnson seeing and getting on you. And I think it was carefree. Wasn't a lot of shootings then, drive-bys, wasn't a lot of that. It was a close-knit family.
Do you have any memories, like when, you know, kids are having fun, but they, like some neighbor saw them doing something or anything like that? Like, do you have a story?
I kind of liked it to stay out the way because I already knew. If Ms. Johnson seen us doing something, she could chastise us, and then your parent get chastised too. So let me see, vague memory. Being in somebody's future, eating their peaches, and we used to have fig fights and got in trouble for that. But that's basically what we used to do back in the day. Ring somebody's doorbell and run. That's what the kids did. So it wasn't really, I didn't too much get in trouble.
50 years later, Patricia's still friends with people that she used to run around with when she was a kid. But when it comes to role models and people who've really influenced her in her life, one of the big people that she talked about was her grandmother.
Well, my grandmother was a hardworking person. You know, like I said, she came out here with her 5 kids and no husband. And so that was my role model, you know, seeing how hardworking she was. And that's what she installed in her kids and even her grandkids. Nothing is given to you. You have to work for it.
Her grandmother is also one of those people who instilled in her this sense of politics.
You know, my mom, grandma, kept articles with Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and John F. Kennedy, John R. Kennedy. And so we always watched the news and was informed of what was going on in the world. And I got involved in 1984 with Push Coalition when Jesse Jackson ran for president. He came down, matter of fact, he came to Manchester in Vermont, and he was promoting, he was running for president, and I walked in and listened to what was being said, and I joined into his organization.
So you were starting this process of wanting our first black president in 84.
Yes. And maybe that was the aha, you know, black president, but I guess we wasn't ready. But we got Obama in 2008. So, you know, yeah. But maybe that was black power, you know, yeah, let's go for it. But then I also love what Reverend Jesse Jackson stood for, even though he wasn't here in California. You know, Chicago, I believe, or wherever he's from, you know, you could see his movement on TV and see how many people was involved. And so let's start, you know, getting involved here.
Her grandmother also instilled in her a strong work ethic. She got her first job at the age of 13.
My first job was an after-school program. You know, back in the 70s, we could get jobs through school. It was a summer job. And so what we did was passed out lunches for summer at the park. You could come eat, you know, and it was activities that the parents could drop their kids off at, or you could stay at the park. And so that was my first job.
Does it still exist?
No. Need to bring it back. Really, it do. Because that installed stuff in us. You know, school back then, and I say back then like I'm very old, but I'm not. But, you know, schools taught you. The after-school programs, you know, they gave us our first job, showed us how to do a bank account and how to save your money. So, yeah, they need to bring them kind of programs back to our community.
What happened? Where did they go?
Maybe cuts. I mean, you know, I ain't been to school in a while, so I guess it's a lot of stuff get cut in our communities is the first place stuff get cut at.
Did you see other things or other programs that you had when you were growing up that doesn't exist anymore?
Yes, they didn't took music, auto mechanic, wood shop, sewing, them academics. Everybody is not college material. Everybody's not going to go to college. But, you know, when I was in junior high, high school, you took them kind of classes and you could go into that kind of field. You know, they taught you how to, like I was telling the guy outside, I know how to change a tire. I know how to change my oil and check it. And them kind of things stuck with me, you know. And people can leave. You could be a seamstress. And it was, that wasn't a lot of money back then, but our economy and the rent control wasn't as high neither.
Remember that story we were talking about where South LA was filled with good jobs and a middle-class community? So then the opposite happens.
So then by the end of the 1980s, unemployment is high, housing conditions are poor, and there's a lot of local unrest.
Everyone knows what happens in 1991.
Thanks for joining us for the city of Los Angeles, a third day of tension and violence. As night approaches, police and National Guard units are out in force. Federal troops are on standby. Violence in the city appeared to die down a bit today, but the toll is obvious. 37 people dead, more than 1,300 injured, more than 4,000 arrested. Damage estimate, $200 million and rising.
In 1991, a witness captures four police officers beating Rodney King. When a year later, a jury acquits the police of any charges, South LA erupts.
And Patricia lives just a few blocks away from where it all started.
If you go back and see some clippings, it was just like what the clippings said, but it was really terrifying that you lived in it. You know, the riots started on Florence and Normandy. And it was terrifying to see buildings burning and nobody doing nothing about it. You know, I don't think, my whole concept was we are burning and tearing up our own community. And I felt that they just let that happen, you know. And when I say they, you know, police really didn't come in our community to do nothing. But if you went to Torrance or anywhere else, they were standing there pushing you back this way. So they was protecting their cities and just let ours go in shambles. Businesses from Manchester all the way down, they just burned. They never came back.
Patricia watched as her city burned down. She recognized the fires were the symptoms of something much deeper.
Even with the Rodney King riot, it wasn't really about Rodney King. It was about what was going on in our community. You know, the girl that the lady shot in the head at the store for the orange juice, the police thought somebody had a gun that was sleeping in their car and shot her about 17 times. So it was being frustrated with what was going on in our community, and wasn't nothing being done about it. So I guess, you know, and for some folks, if violence is their only answer, but I don't think it was. You know, we didn't do ourselves a good service for burning down our community. It wasn't. But it was terrifying. It was terrifying to see the police. We was on, couldn't come out at a certain hour. Our supermarkets was burnt down, so we had to go further out to shop. You had to go to the post office and pick up your mail because, you know, wasn't nobody coming in to do nothing.
After the uprising, South LA residents had to start the process of rebuilding.
And for Patricia, getting involved, it was a total no-brainer.
I just do this because, you know, it's, you can't complain about something if you're not in it. And I tell everybody all the time, you can't say you're not voting because your vote do count. But you can't complain if you don't go vote. And something got passed because it could have been your vote that passed it. So, and I like to engage and let folks know what's going on in the community, what initiative, what candidate is who and what, because some folks don't know.
Patricia's been involved with SCOPE for more than 10 years. She's been door knocking, talking about propositions that affect the community. And when it comes to talking to people, Patricia is a natural, and you can really hear it in her stories.
I have a lot of stories, but one in particular, I think it was the finals, NBA finals. So I knock on the door, and the wife comes to the door, but I'm looking for her husband. And she goes, well, you know, they in the backyard. We having a barbecue because the finals is on, and but you could go back there and talk to him. So I walked around through her backyard, and I'm engaging with him, and he was like, oh, well, you might have other people. So I had to look on my list, and I started calling out addresses, and it was like four other different families there. And so I told them all at one time, and we engaged, and they all said yes to the issue. And that was, I was like, oh, that's cool. I talked to like five different families and they gave me a hamburger, a hot dog, and a soda. Even though we're not supposed to do that, but you know, it's five families. So, you know, I got like 10 contacts.
Of course, not everyone is amenable to her ideas. Perhaps the person who challenges her the most is her sister.
You know, we have a script. So she's always my guinea pig. She's always my guinea pig, you know. Oh, we working on this and that and this and that. And she be like, but no, I don't think. I was like, yeah, this needs to be, you know. So no, yeah, so we debate, and then sometimes she difficult, and I'd be like, okay, you know what, debate over. You know, I can't pull you, but all right. So I practiced on my sister. Sometimes I could pull her and she see the light. And sometimes, you know, no.
And do you think she does that because she wants to play devil's advocate, or do you think she does it because she just really thinks differently than you?
On some issues, she probably think differently. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. Some, she just want to be devil's advocate to make sure I'm on point with what I'm talking about. So, you know, like I said, I research even after, you know, I look at the pros and cons of it all. And then I can be able to persuade a person better because I know more about what is really going on with just, this not just a script that I come and do. You know, I look at it and I weigh the pros and cons of it, and some initiatives be on CNN and you hear everybody else talking about it because they think California is the guinea pig. You know, we pass something first before the other states start doing it. So you have a lot of people, and you got flip side, the good and the bad, but I think the good outweighs the bad.
It was Patricia's grandmother that brought her family to South LA. Now, Patricia is raising her own grandkids in the very same neighborhoods. 5 generations of family have lived here, and she wants to see a better South LA.
I have grandkids, and I want to see a better future for them. You know, I want to see better schools, better education. I want to see that they can be able to walk around with no problem. You know, police. You know, I'm with the police, and sometimes, you know, the police brutality, you know. I have 2 boys, and I always taught them that you have 2 things going against you. You're young and you're black. My grandkids, I got 1 turning 1 next week, and so next month. I want to see them with a brighter, better future. You know, I think that our schools can improve. Why do we have to get bused to Santa Monica or Malibu to get a good education when we can have one right here in our own community?
So what does Patricia look forward to? Why does she invest so much blood, sweat, and tears in having people participate in the political process?
I think she sees the path that's been paved by the communities that came before her, and she knows that along with her own community, she has to continue on it. The road isn't simple, and it's going to take a lot of work, but if anyone can do it, it's her.
Keep pushing and keep fighting and keep talking. You know, it's not just going like Dr. Martin Luther King said, I had a dream, but he didn't get to the promised land, you know. I know he rolling over and jumping up in heaven, a black president, you know. I seen this, you know, I seen it, but I didn't get there. So, you know, even for his movement, it paved the way. You know, for us to vote, rights that we have now, people paved the way for us. And so I should have said, that's why I do this too, to pave the way for the folks that's coming after me. You don't have to be a person that walk and talk on people's doors, but you tell your friends. You know, you can engage without engaging. Meaning, you know, you come out and get, it's like a sponge, you absorb a bit, and then when you squeeze it, the water fall out. So go tell your neighbor across the street, or, you know, at your community center, what you heard or what you learned, or, you know, when you come out to the meetings and walk through your community and see what needs to be done. See how you can fix it. one block, one street, one community at a time.
From G.O.D. to infinity, for real. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. Gotta change it now.
Thanks to Patricia Livingston and Sirenia Perez for sharing their stories. Special thanks to Scope LA and staff members Eric Huerta, Manisha Vaze, and Laura Muraida. You can find out more about their work at scopela.org. You're listening to Rework, a program of the UCLA Labor Center and KPFK. This show was produced by Citlali Chavez, Stephanie Ratapper, Saba Wahid, and Elizabeth Machado. Voiceover dubbing by Angela Flores. Music supervision by Francisco Garcia Nava.
Visit our website at reworkradio.org or visit us on Facebook at /reworkradio. You can also tweet your reactions to this show to @rework_radio or send us an email at rework@irle.ucla.edu. Until next time, rethink, rework.